Welcome back.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. There are strange noises and a rotten smell coming from the attic of Solomon Kugel's damp farmhouse in upstate New York. Downstairs, his wife resents him. His kid is sickly, and his mother imagines herself to be a Holocaust survivor, even though she was born and raised in New York City. Yet Kugel remains an optimist, which his shrink declares is the problem. The more hell-bent one is on life, the more terrified of death. Kugel is part Nathan Zuckerman, part early Woody Allen, and the entirely comic protagonist of Hope, a Tragedy, a new novel by Shalom Auslander. Shalom is a regular contributor to PRI's This American Life and author of the international bestseller Foreskin's Lament, and joins us now on the line. Shalom, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit more about Solomon Kugel and his family. Why did they migrate from Brooklyn up to Stockton, New York?
Well, they were trying to get away from his past, from history in general. And Stockton is a town that's famous for nothing. Nothing happened there. No wars were fought. No treaties were signed. And this is proving to be a big selling point for the town. And so lots of urbanites, young families who are just sick of everything that's ever happened before today, move up there to start over.
But he does find, I guess, a form of history up in his attic. What's up there?
Well, he's hearing noises, and despite the town's lack of history, there is an arsonist going around burning down farmhouses, just like the one he has. And so he is concerned that perhaps it's mice or perhaps it's an arsonist. And he goes upstairs in the middle of the night one night, and behind some walls of book boxes and other things, he finds an old lady living up there who, it turns out, is Anne Frank.
She's a potty-mouthed Anne Frank, too. She says she didn't die in a concentration camp. In fact, her publisher knew she'd be worth a lot more dead. How come he just doesn't kick her out?
Well, first of all, he's Jewish, but even if he weren't, you don't want to be the guy who kicks Anne Frank out of your attic. That's not a tombstone anyone wants.
So he doesn't report her to the police. In fact, he becomes a kind of errand boy for her. And he spares his wife knowing about Anne Frank in the attic. He buys melons and vegetables and places them in the garden so his mother will think she's growing him. He carries a lot of hope for others. And what is he protecting them from?
Well, probably from reality, but I think that he's, his professor, his sort of mentor, Professor Jove, has been telling him for some time that his biggest flaw is hope, is optimism, and that tends to, his hope for things to get better tends to hurt him quite drastically in his life. And I've always found that to be true about myself.
Well,
I walk in here and I'm sure this interview is going to go well, but I'm not going to.
Well, can you read from the book? There's a bit we talked about you reading when Saul is unable to sleep. He's thinking of the advice of Professor Job, who encourages, let's say, the not-so-wise Solomon to abandon hope.
But see, to my point earlier, I've now forgotten what page that's on.
It's on page 32 of The Galley. I don't know if you have The Galley copy or not.
I don't, see? Totally. It happens all the time.
Okay, so why don't you read what you
want
to read?
I got it. I'll start. Here we go. Here we go. Kugel, you just cut me off if I'm going on too long, because I don't remember where I was supposed to stop. Kugel first began seeing Professor Jove the previous year, soon after Jonah's illness. Kugel was having a difficult time sleeping. The anxiety and anger that had been building within him for some time were threatening to spill over, and he was determined to do whatever was necessary to be the husband Bree deserved and the father Jonah needed. He'd seen analysts in the past, but psychiatry was too narrow a scope for him now. Professor Jove, however, was a polymath, not just a Jungian or a Freudian, not just a Kantian or a Cartesian. He had studied the ancients and the moderns, the realists and the impressionists. He had studied everyone from Aristotle to Zarathustra, from Democritus to Heraclitus, and, as he liked to say, all the itises in between. He was, in a sense, the distillation of all of Western and Eastern thought of the past 2,000 years combined, and it was Professor Jove's opinion, standing as only someone today could on the 21st century peak of all history, heir to all mankind's experience, wisdom, and knowledge, that the greatest source of misery in the world, the greatest cause of anguish and hatred and sadness and death, was neither disease nor race nor religion. It was hope. Hope? Kugel asked. Pessimists, Professor Jove replied, don't start wars. It was hope, according to Professor Jove, that was keeping Kugel up at night. It was hope that was making him angry. Give up, read the sign on the wall behind Jove's book-covered desk. You'll live longer. But you've been to Yale, Harvard, Cambridge, said Kugel. That's how I know, said Professor Jove. Kugel had waited weeks for an appointment. We are rational creatures, Professor Jove explained. Hope is irrational. We thus set ourselves up for one dispiriting fall after the next. Anger and depression are not diseases or dysfunctions or anomalies. They are perfectly rational responses to the myriad avoidable disappointments that begin in a thoroughly irrational hope. Tell me, he said, Hitler was the last century's greatest what? Kugel had shrugged. Monster? Optimist, said Professor Jove. Hitler was the most unabashed, doe-eyed optimist of the last 100 years. That's why he was the biggest monster. Have you ever heard of anything as outrageously hopeful as the final solution?
Okay, let's stop with the final solution.
nice stopping point.
Don't you think? Professor Jove also, you know, we're talking
and
about
cut.
Hitler is the ultimate optimist, you know, Anne Frank, Alan Dershowitz jokes. You're mowing down some of the big sacred cows, or I don't know, maybe I should say golden calves. How do you get away with this, Shalom?
Well, that's true. I'm not sure it's golden calves or sacred. Well, you know, there's that thing of sacred cows make the best burgers. But to me, that's the biggest sacred cow in the book isn't any person. It's that idea. It's the idea that what if a character's, you know, fatal flaw is not booze or lying or infidelity, but it's something we tend to think of as positive, hope. What if that's the thing that keeps screwing him up, that if he just give up, not even entirely, just a little bit, you know, strive for mediocrity, then perhaps he'd be a lot happier.
Saul wonders what he'd need to pack to live in an attic if there were another Holocaust, and he asks his friends, you know, if they'd let him and his family hide in the attic. Now, you did a series of trailers for the book, and you ask your friends, we'll play a little clip here from Ira Glass, from Sarah Vowell, and the writer John Hodgman, the same question. If the Holocaust comes, can I come and stay in your attic with my family?
You are so pathetic that you don't even know any non-Jews who can shelter you, because all you do is that you're writing for Jew outfits like Public Radio and the New York Times. Like, you haven't...
It would be a pretty tight squeeze. You're not exactly Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, here is my policy on house guests, Holocaust or no. I loathe them, and I will do everything I can to dissuade.
How likely do you think this is going to be?
I'd give it a 75% chance.
I don't know. I feel like I'm being talked into something here.
75% chance, you think, Shalom?
Well, I was waiting for the show to come on and listening to the BBC, so I'm just going to ramp that up to about 98.
Okay.
I'll be amazed if it doesn't happen by the end of the day.
Did you call any others who didn't make the trailer?
No, I emailed some people who just didn't reply.
Is this a useful exercise for readers, do you think, to consider which attics would accommodate them and their families?
I thought it was a pretty good idea for an app. I thought that would be just... you know, like I help or I save me, and you just put up, you know, if you have a space or if you need a space, you know, no pets, that kind of thing, and then you can cross-reference it with Google Maps or something.
Well, in fact, you think that it would be much different. One could find a Miep in the current age using just a smartphone.
Sure, and it would be your UPS guy, because he would have to know you were there. And so all of a sudden your whole entire life, your whole family, everything you own would become in the hands of this guy that you don't even give a nod to when he drops a package in front of your house. All of a sudden he's holding your whole life. And you're just like, oh, please, Phil, don't rat me out. I needed these books. I needed the Cambridge Guide to Dostoevsky. Don't tell anyone.
Well, this book is a lot. I read a lot of the burden and also the surprise of memory and the narcotic of hope. And I'm wondering, you're also creative director at McCann Erickson in New York. It's all over the world, actually. It's a big advertising firm. But aren't you kind of trading in hope? Isn't advertising about hope on some level?
Well, I don't go in the office that much. I kind of work from home. Yeah, that's how I know. It's all lies. It's all, you know, that's everything. That's fashion, that's magazines, that's everything. It's this, and I don't know that there's any other way through life but to do that. And it just seems that gone too far, it's probably a bad thing. And I, having written the book and given it to some friends who are in the psychiatric profession, and when I mean say friends, I mean my shrink, there is a certain amount of admission that that is half the job. Half the job is trying to talk people out of hoping a little bit too much. You know, I know he's not the greatest guy in the world, but come on, who do you expect your husband to be? It's kind of like lower the bar a little bit, and we might all be happier.
Solomon Kugel thinks frequently of death and what his last words will be when he dies. Have you thought about what you'd like your last words to be?
Well, there is part of his thinking where he just doesn't want it to be begging for his life. I kind of like that. My bigger concern is not what it will that I have I for myself that I pick the right thing, but it's more that unintentionally the last thing I say will be asinine, like. I'll be leaving the house and I'll call back to my son and say, you know, next time wipe your pee off the seat and then a tree will fall on me. And those are my last words. Wipe your pee off the seat.
Shalom Oslander, I really want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Shalom will be reading from the book tomorrow at the Brookline Booksmith in Brookline, Massachusetts. There are details on the reading, a video of Shalom's request for attic space, and reviews of the book at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Coming up, story of three friends for whom an odd token spurs a late leap into motherhood. That's when Word of Mouth continues on NHPR.